This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
And a good afternoon. My name is Aaron Young. You're listening to WKAR East Lansing Sports Talk right here on WKAR 870 AM. I am not the host for today's show. We're having some emergencies right now. So Rico Cooney is actually going to be filling in for Earl, and he'll be in here for just a moment. So I'm just holding down the fort for right now. So there's a lot of talk in the sports world, obviously, to discuss. We got a lot of Tigers stuff going on. Brandon Inge, man, he's doing great in Oakland right now, so maybe that's a resurgence there. We got the Players' Championship coming up this weekend as well. And there it is. There's Rooney coming in right now. So, Rico, I'm sorry. So I'm going to hand things over. I'm going to hand things over to Rico here once he gets settled in, and we'll get the ball rolling. All right, there you go, buddy.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. This is Ricardo Cooney from SpartanMag.com sitting in for the legendary Earl Robinson here on WKR Sports Talk 870. Hey, we got a good show for you today. We're going to talk baseball. Baseball, baseball, baseball. And I got Chris Solari from the Lansing State Journal. And the only way to do it is just get right into it. So let's go. Hey, Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine.
A little bit behind today?
Yeah. Crazy traffic. A lot of construction on Michigan Avenue.
Oh, I went over to cover the Michigan State baseball game yesterday and tried to go down Abbott Road and found myself running into a roadblock. And then I tried to circle around and go over by Breslin Center on Kalamazoo and ran into a roadblock.
Yeah, there's construction everywhere on Michigan Avenue and all over campus.
Yeah, it's that time of year. You know, students leave, and here we are. I mean, with orange signs everywhere, orange barrels everywhere.
All right, so let's get into some baseball here. Let's talk about Michigan State baseball. They had a win yesterday against Toledo. And what is this, I think, the third straight season where they've had 30 wins?
That is correct, yes. And that's the first time in program history for 30 wins three straight years in a row.
Now, what does that mean? Because obviously this year they're not sneaking up on a lot of people. I mean, it's obviously with Jake Boss, it's obviously been established as a quality program now. So, I mean, what's that next step for them? I mean, I figure they're going to have to win the Big Ten, you know, either title or the tournament to get into the NCAA tournament. But what's next for this program now?
Well, as of right now, their RPI is in the 44 range, was going into yesterday, which kind of puts them on the bubble of getting an at-large berth. And, you know, the last few years, the Big Ten's only had one team in the tournament. But, you know, they've gotten two teams in, and on occasion, three teams. And so their best hope right now is to keep winning these games that they've got in front of them. They've got Iowa this weekend. They got Central Michigan on Tuesday, and then they wrap up the regular season next weekend with Penn State, and those are all winnable games. So you got to go out and get those first and foremost, which, you know, if you finish the season strong like that and continue to boost your RPI, then have a good showing in the Big Ten tournament, I think they could possibly sneak into the tournament this year. I mean, ESPN has them as one of the last five in the tournament as an at-large bid. So it's going to be an interesting couple weeks here with the baseball team for sure.
But that, I guess that means the way you've kind of mapped that out is they really can't have any slip-ups.
Well, yeah. They can't slip up against teams that they shouldn't slip up against. And that's one thing. I wrote about that today, how Jake has really kept them on a focus this season. They're 14-1 in their games, their non-conference games this year, since they returned from their spring trip in Florida. And that's really impressive, and that's really where you boost that RPI, because last year I think they went, when they came back, you know, there was a couple things that were considered non-conference games. They played a three-game series last year with Michigan that was non-conference, but and taking that out of the equation, against non-conference, non-Big Ten teams, they were 5-7. Now, those seven losses, really, you know, even though they won a share of the Big Ten title, those are what cost them a spot in the NCAA as an at-large team. I mean, Illinois obviously got hot and won the Big Ten tournament and got the league's automatic berth, but the league as a whole had a pretty abysmal RPI last year, so that really cost them. And I think that the coaches and the athletic directors took that to heart this year when creating schedules. And, you know, Michigan State went out and scheduled a Baylor, scheduled some of the top teams when they did go down south, and, you know, from the south, which Texas A&M is another one that they played a couple games against. So I think that there was a definite focus for the league, but also a definite focus from Jake Boss and the Spartans to kind of bear down in those Wednesday games, those Tuesday games when they're playing the directional Michigan schools or playing a MAC school like Toledo yesterday.
So with all that being said, who are the guys, maybe two or three guys on this team that kind of have to be the mules here to lead them down the stretch?
Well, I think you start at the top of the order with Ryan Jones from Hazlitt. He's got to continue to get on base at the clip. He's about a 360, 370 hitter right now, which, you know, in the college game, that's an achievable feat. He's about 200 at-bats, a little over 200 at-bats, too. So it starts with Ryan getting on base. You need to have the freshman they have in their order. Jimmy Pickens leads the team with 6 home runs. He's a critical part of their order down at the bottom of the lineup to keep things moving and score runs at the bottom of the lineup. Because, I mean, that's where you need to win games in the Big Ten is with your bottom of your lineup. Because, I mean, a lot of teams have those top of lineup 1-4 hitters, 1-5 hitters. It's 3-9 where they need it. Anthony Cechi is another detox to flip it over and get on base at the 9 hole. And then, you know, when you look at Jordan Kerr, and he's been up there and leading in the Big Ten hitting, you know, up towards the top of the hitting charts and batting average this year. So he's one guy that, you know, hitting in the 4 hole yesterday, he doesn't have a home run. But the 3 guys above him all have home runs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the guy right in front of him in the 3 hole might be the most important hitter, too, Torsten Voss, who's, you know, probably the best pro potential player on his team. Teams have been pitching around him a little bit, so it'll be interesting to see in the next few weeks and then to the Big Ten tournament just how many pitches he sees and how selective he is in getting that pitch to drive him.
Now, how are they for the pitching? How's the pitching look like?
The pitching has been very solid this year, and the Spartans have been leading the Big Ten in a lot of pitching categories. You know, it starts with Tony Bucciferro, who pitched in the Cape Cod League last summer and kind of turned some heads. He's been a solid Friday starter for them to open the series. And Andrew Wozniak had some moments this year as well. You know, a very solid campaign and, you know, pitched a complete game. And then once you get into the three starter with David Garner, he's had his ups and downs, but he's got a live arm. He's got a whip for an arm. And you know, when he's on like he was last week against Purdue, he can shut down anybody in the country. And he shut down Purdue, which was the 13th ranked team in the country, in a complete game. He shut down Baylor for 6 innings back in the spring. So he's kind of a probably the key to the rotation right now.
When you look at just kind of the facilities now and the time and the money and the effort that Michigan State has put into baseball, is this kind of the model for what you would see in a college program when a university, you know, puts it up front and says we're going to make changes and we're going to put in the time, put in the effort? Is this what you're seeing as far as that reward, that investment coming through?
Yeah, I think you could say that. You know, Michigan did the same thing as well, and having Fred Wilpon help with the field down there and putting the effort into the facility at their place. And Michigan State's done that, obviously, with Drayden McClain, the former Astros owner, and getting some of the former pro alumni, Mark Mulder, Kirk Gibbs, and getting those guys involved in recruiting the funds and building the hitting building dispersed. That was the first thing, and then building the stadium infrastructure and you know, now the rest of that project and making old College Field kind of get a new look and look like more of a professional college atmosphere rather than kind of the ramshackle nature of its past with just some you know, high school bleachers out there. And it's come a long way. I mean, it's come a very long way. And you know, the top high school players do take notice of that. And I think that it's always been a fight to keep some of those top high school players from either going pro or going to Southern schools. And it's, you'll always fight that I think, in the North anyways, just simply because the amount of games you can get in and the amount of game simulation you can get in. You know, you can't compete with Florida for weather up here in December. I don't think that they've created anything yet that they can really do that other than the Metrodome,
right?
Which that in and of itself is a whole other ball game. So you got to start with the facilities, and you got to start with having a coach that players want to come and play for, who has the idea and mindset of winning games every day, like Jake has really given this program.
Yeah, I mean, that was my next question is in talking about Jake and just the culture. I mean, you can see there's an obvious change in the culture in number one, the expectations, and in number two, going after the top flight kids in the area.
Yeah, you know, he's got Justin Allman from Holt coming in next year, who is an outstanding pitching prospect. You know, one of the top players, high school players in the state this year. He plays some third base as well. He'll be a key to their future. I mean, the guys that he brought in this year. I mean, Mick Van Vossen pitched yesterday and threw 7 2/3 strong innings. He's a freshman. He was drafted. Jimmy Pickens, like I said, leading the team in home runs with 6 this year. He was drafted. Blaze Salter, a monster of a kid. You know, grandson of Bill Freehan. He was drafted. So you look at that, I mean, he's bringing in kids who have draft pedigrees. Garner was drafted, and that's, you know, sometimes you don't see that. You see some of those kids escaping to the Notre Dames from Michigan and that's the first thing. I think the first thing is identifying, recruiting, and then also keeping the talent and getting them coming. And secondly, I think Jake, like I said, with the midweek games, when you see him you know, putting an emphasis on it and getting the pitching depth of guys like Van Voss and Mike Theodore has been a solid midweek starter for them. And Jeff Kinley has been very strong out of the bullpen, a left-hander, a sophomore. I think when you put the talent in place and then you implore them to win, because, you know, you can't have a major league mindset because your season is about a third of the game. So every game takes on a little bit more importance at the college level. And Jake's done a good job of explaining that and keeping that focus for the kids to know that you got to come every day and you can't really have an off game. You can't just take a gimme and say, okay, well, we're going to throw a random lineup out here. He's been good about keeping his starters in there and getting them to that point where it's not just about player development, it's about winning.
So when you total all those things up, and I'm sorry to say I have not been to a game over there yet, but I'm definitely, I think I'm going to try to get over there before the end of this season. But when you total all those things up, I mean, I think what you're looking at is a program that's not willing to fall on the excuse that, hey, we're a northern school and we're at a disadvantage.
Right. But they recognize it. They recognize the limitations that are sometimes perceived and sometimes reality when it comes to playing above the Mason-Dixon line. But at the same point, that doesn't mean they don't feel like they've got the talent to go out and win these games. And, you know, that, you know, talent versus the amount of time you spend on the field outside, at this point in the year, they kind of catch up. You know, you might be early in the year, when the northern schools do go down south and it's their first venture outside and they're getting fly balls off the bat for the first time in the air and taking ground balls off of grass instead of turf indoors. I think early on you might see a little bit of disparity because the southern schools have been doing that all winter and for a few more weeks in January before teams up here can go outside and do that. But that doesn't mean it's a crutch. That doesn't mean that the players don't have the talent and capability to do that. That's why they make those spring trips. So it'll be interesting to see in the next few years just exactly, you know, what the NCAA does in terms of trying to level the playing field with that. But, you know, they're not using it as an excuse. They do know hey, we went out and beat Baylor, and Baylor's the number two, number one ranked team in the country. We can do this. We can compete with anybody in the country.
Okay. All right, Chris, we're going to take a short break here, and we'll come back with you, and we're going to get into maybe some lug nuts and some pro baseball and obviously the Tigers. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870.
Chris Farris earned 7 Bronze Stars serving with the Army's elite Delta Force. His wife told USA Today that combat, emotional distance, and all that time away nearly destroyed their marriage.
You teach them how to be soldiers, but how do you be a father and how do you be a husband?
I'm Neil Conan. Lessons from a Military Marriage. Chris and Lisa Farris join us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
That was Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 p.m. right here on AM 870.
The weather forecast for today, breezy and sunny, the high will be in the mid-60s. Overnight, mostly clear skies with a low around 40. We'll get to about 71 for a high tomorrow with sunny skies. Mostly cloudy for Saturday with a chance of rain and a high in the low 70s. I'm Scott Pohl.
Hey, welcome back to Sports Talk 870. This is WKR. This is Ricardo Cooney from SpartanMag.com sitting in for Earl Robinson. And if you're just joining us, we have Chris Solari from the Lansing State Journal. We're talking baseball the entire hour. And this is something I've been waiting for, and I hope Chris provides you with the wealth of information that he usually does me when we're off the air. But I put a lot of pressure on him because he's a good baseball man. So I'm definitely going to have him answer as many baseball questions as we can this afternoon before we take flight from the air. Chris, let's talk a little bit about the situation that happened with the lug nuts this past week with the son of Jim Leland and the grandson of Al Kaline, and then a Michigan State product playing for the West Michigan Whitecaps.
Yeah, Colin Kaline and Patrick Leland, those are two names that Tigers fans were pretty familiar with off the draft a couple years ago. And I believe Nicholas Avila, who is, Alex Avila's cousin and might be his brother, he was on that West Michigan nepotism team as well. Patrick Leland's been a kid who, for a number of years, has been considered one of the best players at his age. I remember back when he was 12 years old, Baseball America called him the best 12-year-old in the country. I don't know what that means.
I was going to say, isn't that kind of scary? Who's watching a 12-year-old play baseball?
Hey, who's watching 12-year-olds play basketball?
Yeah, I guess so.
The recruiting and player analysis mindset goes. I mean, remember when Oregon State was on the cover of Gary Payton was on the cover of Sports Illustrated, and they broke it down all the way to the eighth or ninth grade. And that was a good 20 years ago now.
Yeah,
25 years ago. And that was when it started. That's when people really started to say, let's look a little bit forward. But no, Patrick Leland, and he's got a future as a catcher. Whether he can make it to the big leagues is one thing. But he is... he obviously had a big game the other day against the Lugnuts, and I think it was like 3 hits somewhere in that range. And Colin Kaline's another guy who, a great example of a kid from Michigan bypassed college and instead went and signed with the Tigers. Going back to the Michigan State discussion, that's the kind of kids that Michigan State and Michigan has struggled historically to keep pointed towards college baseball because of the opportunities that they've got. Patrick Leland, he's hitting .297 for them for the Whitecaps right now. Kaline's struggling a little bit, second base. He's only hitting about .189, only one RBI, so he's seeing limited minutes. And then going to Jeff Holm, I mean, he's a guy who was the Big Ten Player of the Year last year for the Spartans, hit the ball with authority. Led them in hitting, led them in a number of offensive categories, won the Big Ten Player of the Year awards, gets drafted by the Tigers, and then kind of scuffled a little bit when he got into pro ball. And it was it was a long season. He played, I believe, they played about 74 games in the New York Penn League where he went and hit about .230 up there. And that comes after playing 50-some games at Michigan State. So that's a long year for a guy who's not used to it.
Yeah, and I mean, I would figure too, when you look at these kids too, you're talking about, we still, you know, are talking about the switch from the aluminum bat to the wood bat, and I guess that takes some adjustment too.
Yeah, and that's one thing that Jeff Holmes' coach said about him, is that he is learning to kind of get out in front of the ball and not let it come back in on him, which you can kind of do with an aluminum bat. And that's not just Jeff Holmes. That's a baseball-wide situation when you got a guy coming from high school or college to adapt to the wooden bats on a daily basis. And Jeff, to his credit, is hitting the ball right now. I mean, he's only been up with the Whitecaps for six games, but he's making the most of it. He's got 9 hits and 23 at-bats. He's a little bit old for the Midwest League in terms of, I think he's 23 years old, which is kind of around that peak age. You know, usually you see guys that are 19, 20, 21, that are more top prospects. But he also, at the same time, Jeff hasn't had the opportunities, obviously, being at Michigan State and, you know, to progress. But, you know, right now, 9 hits and 23 at-bats. He's got a couple doubles. You know, if he can show that he can hit the ball to the gaps, and if he can play the outfield and move from first base or play first base and be versatile in playing the outfield, I think that you know, he could possibly be a midseason call-up down at Lakeland or, you know, one of the other high A teams and kind of move forward from there. I was just talking to some people over at Michigan State yesterday, and watching, they've got a freshman playing first base right now at Michigan State, Ryan Krill. And, you know, he defensively, he's kind of got a little bit of, I don't want to say limitations, but he's a freshman in the field.
Mm-hmm.
And making a couple errors and not getting a couple scoops. Last year, Jeff Holm was a defensive stalwart and wizard over there. I mean, you kind of take that for granted at first base at times when you've got a guy that can pick a ball out of the dirt or, you know, get up and make a play on a high throw and get back and make the tag or, you know, make a stretch. And that's something that, you know, obviously Jeff Holm probably doesn't power project as a first baseman in the pros. He doesn't have that prototypical, you know, 30-40 home run power that you'd ideally like out of a first baseman. But that doesn't mean he can't play some first base and you know, be almost in a way like a Don Kelly type player where he's going across the field and contributing, especially if he continues to hit the ball and get on base like he is right now at a .391 clip.
All right. So this is Sports Talk 870 WKR. I'm Ricardo Cooney from SpartanMag.com, and we're talking with Chris Ilari from Lansing State Journal. We're talking baseball. Chris, we're going to switch it up, and we're going to go pro. There's a situation that I want to get your opinion on that I kind of thought was absolutely hilarious, but I just want to get how you feel on it. The Cole Hamels, Bryce Harper situation. Obviously, everybody's read about it, heard about it, who follows baseball. He plunked the kid in the back, in the lower back, because I guess Bryce Harper's always had kind of a reputation for being cocky. But, I mean, you know, hey, if you play ball that good, I guess you can be a little cocky. But I guess the funniest thing about it, what earned Hamels the suspension, was the fact that he admitted that he did it, and obviously baseball doesn't like that, so they gave him suspension. But give me your thoughts on what I thought to be a very funny situation, especially listening to Hamels admit that he went out there with the idea to hit this kid.
I'll tell you, I don't get it. Why would you, knowing that the commissioner is coming down on people throwing at guys and especially intentionally, why would you do it? I mean, why would you just come out and admit it? Now, I can understand throwing at a guy, you know. There's a lot of message sending going on between veterans and rookies and veterans and veterans as well, that you know, people know. And people within the game and people on the field know when a message is trying to be sent.
Uh-oh. I think we may have lost Chris. I think we're going to have to get him back. But if you're just joining us, my name is Ricardo Cooney, sitting in for Earl Robinson here at WKR Sports Talk 870. We're going to talk baseball if we can get Chris back. We're going to continue to talk baseball if we can get Chris back. But we were talking about the Cole Hamels situation where he plunked the hotshot rookie for the Washington Senators, Bryce Harper, in the back, and then post-game admitted that he went out there with the intention to hit the young rookie. Now, to me, that seems kind of silly, and obviously we know in the sport of baseball that messages are sent and people are hit. And, you know, there's always this argument about pitching inside and getting guys off their game. But to have Hamels admit in a post-game press conference that he went out there with the intention of hitting Bryce Harper is absolutely crazy. I think we got Chris back, and we're going to continue this discussion. Chris, how you doing?
I continued that discussion for quite a while, I think. unfortunately, it's just me and my computer and the TV that I guess I carry it on with. Where did I leave off with you, I guess?
Well, you left off with the whole idea of the stupidity of him admitting that he went out to, with the intention to hit Harper and with the commissioner cracking down on it. I mean, and I have to say, it kind of reminded me a little bit of the situation when Curt Schilling, I think, was on the Phillies and he was ticked off about J.D. Drew because he didn't want to sign because he wanted a better deal. And he made the call that if he ever got a chance, he was going to hit J.D. Drew. And so I just, that's what it harkened back to me. And I just thought, well, you know, you learn nothing from that situation. And obviously Hamels is an integral part of what the Phillies are trying to do, especially with Utley and Howard being out and probably not coming back till next month.
Yeah, I agree with that. You totally, man, I made some great points to myself the last couple minutes ago when I lost you. No, I think that, you know, the only thing I can think of that logically makes sense is that Hamels was trying to send a message for later in the summer when Bryce Harper's been up for a few months. And let's say the Nationals are still up in the 1-2 spot in the NL East, and the Phillies somehow, inexplicably, they're at the bottom of the NL East right now with all the talent they have. Obviously, not having Ryan Howard is tough. But let's say the Phillies do get up there and they're 1-2 in the division. Now, Paul Hamels has sent a message for Bryce Harper that I'm not going to be afraid to pitch you inside. I'm not going to be afraid, and you should be getting that in the back of your head. So it may have been a message sender for later in the summer. But still, I mean, you know, the fallacy of suspending a pitcher for 5 games is still so ridiculous. I mean,
right, because he just misses a start.
Yeah, they just bumped his start one day.
Right.
What's the options for the commissioner to do in that situation? Do you suspend a guy for 2 weeks at that point? I mean, the pitchers get different suspension rules than hitters. I mean, I don't know. You know, people have talked about how little, especially with the 5-man rotation, how little those suspensions mean anymore for pitchers to throw at guys. So why wouldn't they do it?
Well, and
why wouldn't they do it more often?
Yeah, and then I guess the other thing that kind of cracks me up about Hamels is that you're in the National League – you're going to bat. So at some point, you're going to come up against Washington, and you're going to bat. And what's to say that they're not going to throw at you? Now, obviously, the commissioner's going to, you know, send a message, a memo to both teams and say, hey, you know what? We know this thing happened. If anybody throws at anybody, you're going to be booted. But, I mean, what Hamels has done is maybe created an instant rivalry where one wasn't needed from the Phillies' point of view.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is needed right now, though, from the Phillies' point of view. I mean, you're in the last place in the NL East, and you're playing the first-place team. I mean, you've got to make a statement in a way to say, hey, we're still the top dogs in this division. So, like I said, I think that's the message that was sent with that. But, you know, again, and maybe that's why Colhoun, players don't do stuff like that, especially coming out and talking in the media without having ulterior motives.
So you're saying he had an agenda.
Yeah, and it may have been an agenda to fire up his team. It may have been an agenda to put the Nationals on warning. But, there's a reason that Cole Hamels did it. That's he says I hit him, but he didn't come out and say the reason. It would be interesting to pick his brain and see what he says, why he hit him. But I don't know officials talk about it again, probably.
Well, I mean, and I heard a couple people on, I guess, MLB.com and then some of the ESPN people saying, you know, this might be good for baseball, actually. You know, it's early in the season where things can kind of drag along and there's really not a lot at stake because you got so many games to make up, even if you're down at the bottom there. But, you know, maybe this is a nice little story to put some life into baseball in the early part of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could probably say that this is kind of like maybe a 1982 equivalent of, say, like a Steve Carlton or Tom Seaver at the top of their game hitting a rookie like Wade Boggs, in a way. I mean, I know they weren't exactly in the same division at that point, but still, I mean, that's what it is. It's the top rising up-and-coming player against one of the game's best pitchers. So, I mean, in a way, it is kind of neat to have that kind of rivalry. You don't see that very often anymore, you know, in part because pitchers on their 5-day schedule now don't see the hitters as much.
Yeah.
And you don't build that anticipation of seeing a Bob Gibson against a Hank Aaron, or, you know, because they're not playing in more teams too, you know, more games spread out against more teams. So you don't build those rivalries that in the batter's box and on the mound like that, like you had in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, that's a humorous thing. And I think another circus that we can look at, and it's probably going to be a circus all year long, is the Boston Red Sox. I know you heard about Burnett going out and golfing and ended up losing his start, and it obviously came out that he went out and went golfing. I mean, is that situation with Bobby Valentine, is that just going to get worse, or do you think it's going to stabilize at some point?
I don't know. I mean, you know, I was questioning the idea and concept that the Red Sox had with Ben Sherrington going out and plucking Bobby Valentine off ESPN. I mean, the guy's last two jobs are behind a broadcast booth and in Japan.
Yeah.
You know, there were plenty of opportunities, I would imagine, for teams coming and calling him over the years. But, I mean, every time I see Bobby Valentine, I see that fake mustache that he came back out of the dugout in New York when he was with the Mets.
Yeah.
Ejected from a game. And, I mean, that's just – it's silliness. It's silliness. Now, you wanted to instill discipline in a clubhouse, and that's what you're bringing in.
Yeah.
You're bringing in the guy in the fake mustache. So, I mean, people said that Francona lost that clubhouse last year, and the players, I think, at some point got a little entitled. You know, is that Francona's fault? I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, Francona had a good relationship with those players for a number of years, and then all in one month, you know, the entire dynasty that they built collapsed in and of itself. I don't know. I mean, there needs to be some accountability towards the players on this too, because, you know, guys like Josh Beckett and David Ortiz have been around that team for a number of years now.
Burnett? Yeah, I meant Beckett. Yeah.
Yeah, A.J. Burnett had a great start last night for the Pirates.
Yeah.
He struck out 10.
Yeah.
He's in Pittsburgh now. I do know that.
Yeah.
And, so, I mean, I don't know. I think it is going to be a little bit of a circus because, you know, they haven't really stabilized their rotation. Clay Buchholz has been pitching like garbage. And your bullpen is still a carousel in a way because Aceves hasn't really – he's pitching better than he did in that first series against the Tigers as your closer, but – you know, there's still fluctuation in that back end of the bullpen, and, you know, there's the Daniel Bard experiment in the, you know, in the rotation. You got the Kevin Youkilis injury, and so I think until you get the full product in the field, I'm of the, you know, I said the other day, you know, saying about baseball that people don't quite get, you got to treat it like a golf tournament, and the way to do that is you break it into a fourth. You know, 41 games at the beginning of the year, 41 games as your second round, and then 40 and 40 for the last two rounds down the stretch. I think if you look at baseball that way and kind of gauge it after the 40-game plateau, I think you get a much clearer picture of where teams are going, because teams can get hot and win 6-8 in a row.
Right.
And all of a sudden you go from being a 500 team to leading your division. So, you know, I'm kind of in a wait-and-see mode with them. But, I, you know, signs aren't pointing very well. And like I said, they didn't point well when they made that hire.
Yeah, I mean, I thought for a franchise that talked about wanting to instill discipline and get control of the clubhouse and, you know, saying that we're not as professional as we'd like to be, the Bobby Valentine hire was a curious hire. I mean, I'm sure there's many more managers or former managers out there that you could consider better disciplinarians than Bobby Valentine.
Yeah, and I think one thing that kind of got them, I think they were pretty clear in establishing Dale Swaim as their top candidate during that search, and then he decided to go with C.O. Epstein and join the Cubs, which then, you know, when you look at your two candidates, I mean, Gene Lamont has not had any success as a manager, and some people would say none as a third base coach either, and then Bobby Valentine, who'd been out of the game for so long.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, the new direction of the post-Theo Epstein direction is, as you said, curious is probably the best word to describe it with Boston.
Yeah.
It's almost like they regressed back into their post-World Series days.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take another short break, and we're going to finish up here coming down the stretch with Chris Solari from the Lansing State Journal. This is Ricardo Cooney from SpartanMag.com sitting in for Earl Robinson. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break right here on WKR AM 870.
Bill Bradley served 18 years in the United States Senate, ran for president in 2000, and then stepped away from public life after he lost. Now, as the country faces what he calls severe social, economic, and fiscal problems, he poses a challenge in the form of a new book, We Can All Do Better. I'm Neil Conan. Bill Bradley joins us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
That is Talk of the Nation coming up at 3 p.m. right here on AM 870 WKR Radio.
Good afternoon. This is Scott Pohl with a look at the weather forecast. It'll be sunny today and breezy. The high will be in the mid-60s. Overnight, look for a low around 40 and mostly clear skies. Sunny with a high of 71 tomorrow. Mostly cloudy Saturday, maybe rain, the high 72.
Well, I jumped the gun there, but I'm eager to get back into this baseball conversation. If you're just joining us, we're shooting down here for the last 15 minutes or so of WKR Sports Talk 870. I'm here with Chris Solari from the Lansing State Journal, my favorite baseball man in the region. He knows all there is to know about baseball, and we've avoided it, but now we're going to jump right into it. What is wrong with the Detroit Tigers?
What is wrong with the Detroit Tigers? Well, I think that people are panicking a little bit too much and writing the season off. Again, going back to what I just said about treating the season in 40-game increments, I think that there's a little fluctuation in the lineup, obviously, when you're trying to figure out that two-hole. And obviously, Brennan Bosch has not been a productive two-hole hitter, and you know, he's got 27 strikeouts on the year and hitting .213. That doesn't bode well for a two-hole hitter when you want a guy that just put the ball in play and be able to run the bases, move up runners. And I think that they're starting to kind of find that in Andy Dierks. I think that's one thing that'll help stabilize the situation a little bit. I think that the second thing is the back end of the bullpen has been, to say it's shaky, might even be a good thing. That might be giving it a little more credit than it should. It's been rocky, to say the least. I mean, Valverde hasn't had the command that he had last year, and I think at times you forget he may have had 49 straight saves last year, and he still struggled at times. There were points when he put runners on, either in tie ball games or in a situation where they've got a lead and where he gave up a couple runs. You know, made a 3-run game, a 1-run game. So there was a little bit of fool's gold in some ways last year with Valverde, but you know, the bridge that they've got to Valverde as well has been a little bit overworked early. Maybe that's Jim Leland's fault for pulling some starters early and going to Dotel and Benoit in the seventh and eighth inning sooner than he should have. I think that's one thing. Early on, you also didn't see the 3, 4, and 5 starter positions really giving them much. But now that Drew Smyly's in there in the 5 spot and really another strong start last night in Seattle and looking like he is going to be that left-handed arm that they've been looking for the last few years.
Yeah, I like that kid. I really like that kid.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they haven't had a solid left-handed starter, probably, I would say, since Nate Robertson that 1 year.
Yep.
And I do emphasize that 1 year when Nate Robinson was a solid starter. Kenny Rogers as well, when they had the old gun going for him, the old gunslinger. So Smiley's been a big help in the pack into that rotation. And I think Scherzer and Porcello both have pitched better of late. And I think those in the rotation are the two key spots because, you know, you saw what you're going to get from Fister now that he's back from the injury.
Yep.
You know, he's going to be a guy that keeps pitch count low, hopefully, and makes them just put the ball in play and gets you through 7-8 innings unless he gets pulled after 73 pitches, which, in a way, I can understand that. You know, a guy did come off the DL. He had one big league start. He had one minor league start. So, you know, he's a little bit behind in that respect with his arm strength. So you want to kind of treat him with a little bit of kid gloves off the start. But, you know, he still probably could have given him a few more pitches than Leland gave him that night. I believe that was the Monday game. So I do believe that once you get some of that stuff stabilized, the biggest question mark is going to be who's at second base. I mean, that's, you know, that was the big question mark coming into the year.
Yeah, just stick Ramon Santiago over there and just let it go.
Well, I mean, there's a reason Ramon Santiago has been a platoon player for his entire career, too. I mean, it's not like, you know, people that, and I won't mention Joe Rexroth's name, who believe it. Did I just do that? But you know, people like Joe who believe, oh, Ramon Santiago, just let him play every day. Well, there's a reason he hasn't been playing every day. There's been ample opportunities to get everyday innings at second base. I mean, they moved Carlos Guillen from shortstop there.
Right.
And Carlos Guillen was hurt for a long time. So Ramon Santiago's had innumerable chances to claim that second base job and has not done it over the past decade. Nice, you know, don't get me wrong, nice complimentary player, nice role player, nice, he give him some innings at shortstop, give him some innings at second base, give him some at-bats, but, I mean, if you expect Ramon Santiago to hit 310 with a little bit of power and a lot of speed, you're fooling yourself.
Yeah.
You're fooling yourself. And then, you know, Danny Wirth hasn't produced when he's been at the big league level. Everybody keeps saying, oh, look at AAA. He's done a great job at AAA. There's an old phrase in baseball called the 4A player. And, you know, I think you saw that with Brad Eldred when he got called up. Oh, Brad Eldred hitting all these home runs at Toledo. You know, he got to get his hot bat out there. He's a 31-year-old guy who's had chances at the big league level already and failed in them. And what you see is, boy, he can mash AAA pitching, but he gets up to the big league and he's overwhelmed.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if they have to go out and find a second baseman in the trade market. If you let Worth try and, you know, obviously Danny Worth's a little bit younger than Brad Eldred, you know, by about 5 years. But, you know, he's had some chances. You know, maybe you give him a little bit more of a chance there. Maybe you keep playing Ryan Rayburn there. I mean, he's the thing that I found interesting is that Ryan Rayburn, the last couple days, has looked decent at second base. He's made some tough plays.
Mm-hmm.
He's made some tough plays. But, again, you can't keep having a guy, rolling a guy out there that's hitting .125.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you know, how is that any different than Brandon Hinch?
Yeah.
It's not.
All right. Hey, Chris, we're gonna take a call here. I got Jerry from Hazlitt, and he's got a question for you. Jerry, are you there?
Yeah, Ricardo. Thanks for taking the call.
No problem.
Chris, good to have you on. I just wanted to give you my take on a couple of points and maybe ask you a question. The whole Bryce Harper thing, I thought, like you did, Ricardo, by the way, was kind of comical, mostly by the reaction to it. You know, I can't remember the last phenom under 19 or 20 that's come up. I'm going to guess Robin Yount, but that's how far back it goes. Even
can't forget Ken Griffey Jr. I mean, that's...
Okay, there you go. Ken Griffey Jr. Let's leave it at Ken Griffey, but even other than his bloodline, you know, those guys didn't have a whole lot of prior hype in the media the way that, I mean, Major League pitchers have seen this kid coming for 3 years.
Thank you, Mr. Internet.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, everybody knew about him. I thought it was telling that, and by the way, Ricardo, if memory serves me, Hamill did come up, and he actually did get hit. in that same game.
He did get hit in that game. Okay.
He just got dinged.
Okay.
And it, what was telling was that the umpire, contrary to what you normally see with the retaliation rule, did not toss the pitcher.
which
I found kind of refreshing. But at any rate, the best revenge is exactly what Harper did. 2 minutes later, he shows him upright back and steals home on him.
Yep.
Whether it's in the old days, it used to be Al Kaline getting dusting himself off and hitting a hanging curveball out of the ballpark. But there's a lot of ways to get back, and I have no problem with that at all. I think it was just kind of silly, but I do also agree that the Bobby Valentine hiring was curious. I really think, I don't know what you guys think. I think his this revolving door that these guys come in, they get in the ESPN booth. And I really do think that general managers and some baseball people really do get slightly dazzled by these guys. Okay, it happened to Buck Martinez a few years ago.
And maybe
even some else whose name escapes me. But with that kind of exposure, and I know Valentine has a reputation, too, for, occasionally outing players. And I even know he didn't really do it intentionally with Euclid. I do have to kind of shake my head because I don't think that's a marriage that's going to last too long. I think it's too combustible up there with the media and with Valentine's history.
Yeah, I think right now what you're looking at is maybe a race. Who's going to last longer? Ozzie at Miami or Valentine in Boston?
I would bet on Ozzie, believe it or not.
I'll tell you one thing that's interesting. You do see that a lot from the broadcast booth back to the dugout. But a guy that's doing that is Buck Showalter in Baltimore. And Baltimore's, becoming right now with the Red Sox flipping up and with the Yankees having the pitching problems they are. Buck Showalter's has those Orioles with a lot of young talent. He has them up at the top of that division. No one would have thought that.
Yeah, that's the name I was missing. In fact, Buck, I wish Buck had actually stayed in charge of player personnel. I think he's a guy that wears on his welcome in the dugout before too long also. But he's a really shrewd judge of talent.
Absolutely.
One last question, guys. I know it's getting late. I can take it off the air. I really have a problem. I think I'm in the minority view about the baseball replay. I think it should be expanded. I thought the Armando Galarraga thing could have been a watershed for Commissioner Haircut to do something really, really groundbreaking without really disturbing the integrity of the game. Just want to know what either of your thoughts were on that. And thanks for taking the call, and I can take it off the air.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jerry. Chris, what do you think?
Well, the first thing I think is I've never really seen a guy who has a used car salesman haircut and epitomizes that like Bud Selig. that haircut fits the man. it makes the man.
What do you mean there's no ties in baseball?
As far as replay, I'm on the fence with it. In a way, it's a good thing. I don't think the delay in the game is the biggest concern with it. Baseball's meant to be a pastoral game where you're spending time on a grassy field and escaping from the modern-day trappings of life. That's the way baseball has always been. And I don't think that sitting around for 5 minutes while they review something is a bad thing because, it gives more beer sales.
I was going to say, you can get another hot dog and a beer.
Right, exactly. But where I think it comes into play is more from the logistical standpoint. Now, if you start analyzing foul balls down the lines or some certain things of that nature, balls and strikes, where do you draw the line? Where do you draw the line? And if something happens in terms of on the field, how do you know where to send runners?
I think that's
something they struggle with.
Well, and how many challenges do you get too?
Right. I think it'll probably happen within the next decade in some facet, where there'll be an expanded replay beyond the home run calls.
Mm-hmm.
But where it ends up, I don't know, because there's a lot of wrangling to do with placing base runners and do we go balls and strikes and who knows? At some point, we're going to probably see robots out there.
Behind the plate, too?
Surprise me.
Behind the plate, too?
Hey, why not? What do you lose? You lose the... they already have the pitch tracker to tell you if it's a ball or strike. Now, whether that pitch tracker's right is a whole other thing because, umpire is literally right over the plate Now, do umpires miss calls? Yeah. I mean, do you want to eliminate the human element from it? I mean, there's so many, you know, it replays good and bad for sports in a way, because, you know, the more high-def slow-mo replays you get, the clearer you can see certain things. But then you have umpires and referees who are then all of a sudden afraid to make a call because, well, replay will get it. Or, you know, and that changes the way games are played if the umpires aren't quick and decisive either. So I do see both sides of the argument on that.
Okay. All right. Well, hey, we're winding down here, Chris, and I got one more question for you that you can quickly answer. Best player, Jeff Hamilton or Matt Kemp?
I would say Matt Kemp over Josh Hamilton, just simply because of the age factor. Kemp's a little bit younger. Kemp's got a little bit more speed to go with his pop, and he obviously doesn't have the wear and tear on his body. And I'm not talking about Hamilton's past. I'm talking just about, you know, the physical injuries that he's had over the last few years. But I don't necessarily think that there's a better power hitter in the game than Josh Hamilton. Even with Kemp's ability to hit the ball out of the yard, you know, I mean, Hamilton's a guy that could put up 50 home runs in a year. And you've seen the league kind of get away from that and get more towards a speed game over the past 5 or 6 years for some reason, and away from the power game. I mean, I'm not going to say that steroids had a factor in that, but they did.
Right.
And that's, I mean, speed now, we've regressed back into the 80s style of baseball. So that's why I think where Matt Kemp gives you a little bit more across the board than Josh Hamilton. But I think Josh Hamilton's the kind of guy that would be a hitting star at any era.
Well, I was going to say, you can't argue 4 home runs in a game. And, of course, you know, we don't have time, but we can get into the idea of why did you keep throwing him hittable balls, especially that softball lob he got for the 4th home run.
Hey, Buck Showalter said they were trying to throw the ball off the plate, but they just couldn't do it.
Oh, so that pitcher is so bad that he couldn't get a ball, he couldn't throw a ball, bounce it up there, or throw it outside where Hamilton couldn't reach it.
Yeah, you don't want to make it look obvious in that situation that you're trying to pitch around a guy because, you know, the fans are in it, the players, the TV's in it.
And those guys are former teammates, weren't they? The last pitcher who gave up the 4th home, I think he was with Hamilton.
That's a good question. I have not seen that, so I can't be sure on that. But, you know, it'll be relatively interesting to see going forward how many 2-3 home run games that Josh Hamilton has. Because sometimes you see a guy like this that busts out in one game and hits the ball out like that all of a sudden goes into a swoon.
Yeah.
You know, it'll be interesting to see. But I think, I mean, Hamilton's such an unbelievable talent. I mean, it's a shame you're always going to have that what if in the back of your mind. What if he had taken care of himself? What if he had avoided the pitfalls of drugs and alcohol early in his career? You know, because he, you know, talking about Bryce Harper, Hamilton was a can't miss phenom as well.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the earlier part of the decade, and you know, we're just now starting to see it because of some of the choices he made in his life.
Yeah. All right, Chris. Well, hey, you know what? This has been great. I have been wanting to do this for a long time. And finally, when Earl called me and asked me to host, I said, you know what? I'm getting Chris on because I got to catch up on all my baseball because you know how you just sit there and you're watching TV and you go, oh, I want to talk to this guy about this. And of course, like I said, the Cole Hamels, Bryce Harper, and then Hamilton. And, you know, and I mean, we never even got to Yu Darvish or what's going on with Ozzy down in Miami. I mean, which looks like pretty good, but, you know, you could talk about Hanley Ramirez actually seemingly looking like he's accepting his role and his move to third. So the fat contract shortstop that they brought in can actually earn his keep and keep himself, I guess, in a good mental frame of mind. But
I'll summarize Yu Darvish and Ozzie Guillen for you in 2 words.
Okay.
Phenom, comma, idiot. There.
All right. Thanks a lot, Chris.
All right. Take care, Rico.
Yep. All right. This has been Ricardo Cooney subbing for Earl Robinson from SpartanMag.com. Everyone have a great afternoon. Get out and catch a little sun.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.